You're listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriters. My name is Mark Linsenmeyer. My guest for episode number 236 is T. Templeton. You're right now hearing a bit of the song Chinese Lights from his 2004 album Might Could Have. And we're recording this to promote his new album, Diner of Doubt. If you look on the streaming services, you're right now only going to see those two albums. But he's been recording for many, many years back into the 80s. We'll talk about that journey and about his reemergence with a vengeance onto the music scene. He's put a lot of resources into this new album. He's made videos for, I think, every single song on it. We're going to talk about these songs, My Dead Friend and I Have a Lot of Dreams from that album, and Build Another One from that Might Could Have album. Again, that's 2004. Then we're going to hear one of many as yet unreleased songs, Odioo, that was recorded in 2023. Learn more about him at ttempleton.com. Learn more about this podcast at nakedlyexaminedmusic.com, or get ad-free versions of the episodes and my episode notes by subscribing at patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic. I will have played a little bit of Chinese Lights from Might Could Have 2004, the earlier of the two albums that are currently posted on the streaming services for you. Of course, that was after many, many years. You were already in your 40s at that point, right?
Yes.
Do you have a round number? You were telling me before about how many albums worth of stuff before we entered this period.
I was never in any bands. And what that means is bands that did anything. You know, it's like you always try. You never stop. You record. We put out a 7-inch. You get some gigs. Then the band falls apart and life continues. But you keep writing and recording and thinking you're going to do something. And that's what matters, is you keep doing it. You keep thinking you're going to do it. And I never thought, well, you know, when I'm 66... that's when it's going to happen. Something's going to, you know, be able to get elevated above where I think would like to go. So,
well, yes, the promo agency that pitched you to me, the bio that they had written or you had written for them, was presenting this as after that first published album that we can hear here, that you stopped doing music for 20 years or so, and now you've retired, you're divorced, you're devoting yourself full time to this. And you can really hear, we're about to listen to something from Diner of Doubt, the album we're promoting today, My Dead Friend, one of the singles from that. Yeah, can you say, obviously a lot more money went into this album, it sounds a lot more meticulous, a lot of guest musicians. Yeah, to say a little about this revival and where you're at now.
Yeah, and I would like to point out that I've never stopped. I never took off. I've constantly been writing and recording. One of the songs on this album is 30 years old. I've got tons of material that's just not that good because I was growing. I was learning. But I've been in bands that just never made it over a hurdle. And I always felt uncomfortable not knowing how I was going to pay the next rent or anything. So the reason I point this out is because there's a lot of people out there that never quit. You don't quit. You keep putting stuff out and being creative and being open to whatever comes your way. And that's kind of the deal. And I like you're saying, I retired and I've got the finances to be able to try to get myself out there, get my music out there, because it sounds terrible, but I have more money than I do time in my life. So, God, that's depressing sounding.
So this album, even though it's 11 songs, is sort of a greatest hits, right? In that it is, you know, culling from this pool of 100 plus or something. Well, let's talk about My Dead Friend specifically before we hear the song in full. Was this written for this project or was this hanging around for quite a while?
Hanging around for quite a while. None of these were written for this project. And I've got tons of other songs that I'm going to be releasing in albums that I'm identifying now that weren't written for and that album. This is not a situation where people go, I'm going to put an album out, and they go write songs for it. I've already got these songs that are, they're solid. There's some really good stuff that's coming. That's what I believe. And also the people that are listening to this stuff.
Well, let's let them hear one of the new tunes, the new recordings, I should say. Yeah. Anything thematically you want to say before they hear it, or should we just let them hear it?
I would just like to point out that this isn't a friend that died. This isn't a person. It was a relationship that I had with somebody. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you're in a relationship and you're each individual, but then there's this entity that's in between the two of you that is a thing. And that died. So that's what brought out all of the words and emotion in it.
Coming right.
Yeah, so any thought about the sound palette that you're using here? You know, multi-tracking your voice, and it's just very textured and reverbed. And how did you put this ensemble together in your mind?
A lot of the tracks are original. A lot of that guitar, kind of the wailing guitar.
Mm-hmm. That Neil Young-ish thing, yeah.
Yeah, those were in the original tracks. And then I had Nick Falk play drums, and he's an amazing drummer. Adam Agati play guitar. And these were all friends of James Donahue, who I worked with. He helped me get started because I kind of reached out into the internet and asking for help from somebody, and there was a website that he was on, and picked it up and contacted me, and it went from there. And he had some friends. He does producing, so he brought some people, friends in. I brought in some friends. It came together. I took it and mixed it.
Sounds like you do a lot of home multi-tracking, but then just want to fatten the sound and get some more, you know, that the ethereal female vocal here. It's got a very 60s birdsy, you know, that spooky sort of zombies thing going here with the harmonies. And just the amount of chaos that goes as you go on with these multiple guitars. So that was you doing the Neil Young thing, but that's another guy.
Yeah, Adam did that, came up with that, which was kind of, I would refer to it as the gallop.
Yeah.
It has this gallop in it that, you know, and that with along with the bongos, which I never thought I would have bongos on a song, but it cranks for me. It does.
You never thought you'd have bongos on a song. In listening to your back catalog, it seemed like that bongos would be a very natural thing, because you're sort of coming from an acoustic singer songwriter thing, but with a lot of like fondness for hippie Pink Floyd kind of stuff. Like this song and the next one that we're going to play, they both establish themselves. Here's the whole song, but now here's another 2 minutes of increasing chaos. Just let the sonic, meditate on this.
Okay. Yeah.
So you seem to like a psychedelic ending. Let me put it that way.
You know, it's like I grew up in it, and you know, I'm influenced by the 80s, the 90s, the aughts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the whole psychedelic thing is probably just, you know, cause I grew up in the 60s. So it was such a wonderful era, that and the 90s were big growth areas for bands that were trying new stuff.
Well, let me play just a couple little sections of it, see if we can... tell me about the beginning first. I mean, just you've got this flute-ish thing and something that sounds like a subway horn along with the tambo. Yeah. How are you constructing the atmospherics here?
The flute that's in there was in the original recording, which was, you know, like 10 years ago. Mm. I was in a band, the Hare Krishna... Hare Krishna dub band. It was really strange, but it was the late 90s, early aughts, and it was kind of the days of groove. Yeah, and so one of the guys that was the tabla player worked in mountains of North Carolina and made these flutes. He worked for somebody, and it's a really nice flute, and so I got it from him. And I'm not a flute player.
Sure.
And I'm not a saxophone player, but I'm not afraid to blow on something and see what comes out. But this one, I got to where I could play it for the song, and that's where that comes from. And I don't remember what else is in there. Unless it's probably guitar.
Well, so for this, it eventually sounds like a very tight little band with the drum kit coming in. Did you at least have a click on the whole song? Or
yes, I play with a click on everything that I do. And that's because I was in a band that my ex-wife and I had back in the 90s. And the drummer said, I will only play to a click. And this is the 90s where everything goes loose. And that's just how it was. And so we followed a click, and I learned that that's where the emotion is, that when you start speeding up, that means you've been practicing it too long and you're trying to get that excitement again. So you keep playing faster and faster and faster and faster. And I've seen bands do that where you know their songs and you get there and they play it really freaking fast. And you go, why are you doing that? The soul of it is missing. And a lot of times when you come out of a verse, a chorus will always, it tends to pick up in speed because it's exciting and it's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I put myself to a click, that won't happen. And then that whole soul is not stuck, but it stays in the song.
Part of the psychedelic ending is the hypnotic character of that. And if you're not that it has to be steady, Velvet Underground did plenty of very out of time things that still had that same effect.
Totally.
There can be a certain, you know, we're rising to the frantic religious experience kind of thing that, you know, if it's purposeful, but yeah, having something that is you can just sink into and layer on rather than building the energy some other way.
And I say all this to say, this is what works for me and this is what I do. And I don't want to diss any band that takes their songs and speeds them up. You know, if, man, if that keeps you alive, do it. I kind of sounded judgy there, and I don't mean everybody is doing their stuff. If they're doing it, man, go for it.
Well, when they're doing it on your song, it's a certain thing. So like the background vocals, for instance, the female vocals, was that somebody coming into your space or is that you sending it over the internet and inviting somebody to add things?
Yeah, there was another internet find, Summer Bingham. She is in Williamsburg. I went to a website. It's called Sound Better. I think that's what it is. And I was looking for a female vocalist because I think that sounds really cool. And it was a bunch of ones that I wasn't looking for. And she described her vocal and what she does as raw and not polished. And then she said, if you're looking for a diva, and she wasn't being this in a mean sort of way, if you're looking for a diva, I can hook you up with one because I know several. And when she said all of that in her write-up, I contacted her and she said she'd be glad to. And I was telling my wife about it. And I said, yeah, this sounds perfect. Her name's Summer Bingham. And my wife goes, Summer Bingham? And I go, yeah. She goes, that's so-and-so's close friend. They do music together. And my wife knew this person really close. So it's like small world thing stuff. And I just love what Summer does. And yeah, it's really fun to so I've never met her.
Sure, sure. So just it seems the overall, you're letting people do what they want, but then, well, so you mixed it yourself and then you had somebody else master it just to shine it up?
Yes.
Or, okay, all right.
Yes, but I mixed it up to a pretty far level, mm-hmm. and then I handed it over to Mark Nevers. He's a hoot, and he's really, really good, and he's been doing this forever. You look him up. He's done all sorts of people, and I just got lucky connecting with him over, you know, the internet, and he does really cool stuff. So on my credits, I put that I had the reference mix because I did a lot of stuff.
Sure.
You know, but then I could hand it over to him and send him all the tracks, and he can put his Mark Nevers on it because he can hear this stuff much better than I can.
So it was pre-edited, though. What you sent to him was if the other guitarists or Summer or anybody, you know, was doing too much or things in the wrong place, you could just sculpt that and have everything come in where you want it. So you don't have bongo on the whole song.
Exactly. Bring in a distorted guitar in and out. I'd say I blended it.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a better way. And he mixed it. So yeah, you could tell he followed the reference because he's Mark and he respects stuff. And so he takes it and will follow that and not try to be something different. But he'll put in his Markness and it's like really cool stuff that he does. And he has all this incredible equipment that he knows how to use. And I'm not an engineer, but I want it to sound like what I'm hearing. And he does that.
Let's turn a bit to the songwriting itself. It was good that you explained that this is about the death of a friendship. So we're already sort of creating this abstraction. There's some lines like, you know, you're just part of a plan that has your plan left out. How much of that is playing with words versus, oh, you have a very definite thing you mean by that? Not that you have to, we don't have to demystify anything here if you don't want to go into this.
No, it's cool. You know, there's this feeling a lot of times when I write words, I get this feeling inside of my gut. And then whatever kind of words come out of that darkness, that description, you know, if I were to ask you or anybody right now, write something dark, something that kind of explains the way life can really be. Realizing that what you wanted in life and what you thought you were going to have and the way things were going to turn out or what you were reaching for, that's your plan. You can just feel it. It's like when all of that crumbles, you don't have access to it anymore. There's some other plan going on, and what is the joke? The universe laughs when we...
We make plans. Something like that.
Yes, that thing, yeah.
Well, it's an interesting tone. You know, you have other songs that are more straightforwardly grieving or that sound like Syd Barrett strung out on whatever and stumbling. Yep. But this is a sort of stoic, we have the groove that we're locked in where, you know, the patter of the vocal, that it's not emotionally over-exuberant or something. It's just, well. Kind of a little bit,
you know. Yeah, that's kind of how I kind of sing. I don't do it intentionally. There's something I like the deadness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you bring a summer Bingham in and she provides the other stuff.
Let's stop and do the sponsor talk. Bowie, Dylan, Marley, you've heard the names and maybe you've heard most of their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally beloved and important? With his show The 500, comedian Josh Adam Myers digs into all the breakups and breakdowns, the partying, the sex, and the sorrow that went into the making of all this incredible art. A few years back, Josh realized he'd been listening to the same four albums over and over again for forever, so he decided to go through Rolling Stone magazine's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time to expand his horizons and bone up on some of the classics that he thought he knew more about. But he's not going on this journey alone. Each week, he digs into a different album from the list with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians as guests talking about why they love a particular record and how that music has impacted their lives. I'm talking comedian Patton Oswalt, two-time NBA All-Star Karen Butler, and Sonic Youth bassist Kim Gordon. So join them as they work their way down from 500 to 1. New episodes of The 500 with Josh Adam Myers come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts. I chose Function because it's the only health platform that gives you access to the kind of data most people never see and the insights to actually take action. When you go to your doctor for a checkup, which you should of course do, they're going to treat A, what you actually complain about, and B, specific things that you, with your age group, with your demographics, are at risk for. They are incentivized by the insurance system to do as little as possible, hopefully to catch something catastrophic, but it's not about wellness, it's not about giving you the data about your health to optimize how you're feeling, what you're eating, what you're taking. Inside Function, you can test over 160 biomarkers from heart to hormones to toxins, inflammation, and stress. You get to actually know what's happening in your body. Our topic of the week is fasting, a common weight loss technique these days, but is fasting messing with your hormones, particularly for women? With their monthly hormonal fluctuations, they've got a higher sensitivity to caloric restriction and stress. So if you or your loved one is thinking about fasting, consider testing your levels to make sure your hormones are in check and your metabolism is strong before creating a plan. My treatment of my health issues, and I'm probably like most people, has not been particularly well informed. So having this regimen of testing, and you can get multi-region MRI and CT scans, this enhanced view of what's happening in my body, this is a good idea, and I advise you to go learn more and join using my link www.functionhealth.com/nakedly. Again, functionhealth.com/nakedly. Well, maybe we should get the second song out here, also from the new record. You were nice enough to share the old version of this with me. So this is this the one that's 30 years old? I Have a Lot of Dreams?
No, okay. No, it's like, it's maybe 10, maybe 7 or 8.
All right, so yeah. something still as an adult, as a full adult.
Yeah.
And we get to hear more Summer and just a different, well, this one has a bunch of strings on it.
Yeah,
anything we want to say before we actually get into it? This is, you know, different time signature, different feel completely, but from the same album, of course.
I didn't intend on there to be strings like that, but they ended up on the program, the DAW that I use, and because people took shots at sending stuff, and it just kind of, I don't know, it kind of worked. It was kind of fun. Strings are fun to mess around with, especially when you got really good people, because it was Duncan McKenzie that played the violin. God, that guy's incredible. And Andrew Livingston did the cello, and he's also incredible. Both of those guys are incredibly creative. And so all of a sudden, you got this really cool stuff.
Well, let's hear it, and we'll get more into it.
On the spot, you held your head high.
All right, so we got a slow 9/8. We got much more active bongos. In fact, I don't think I had bongos noted in the previous song, but this one, the bongos are right there. Right from
the
beginning.
They are. Yeah. I don't know if I just think if I had bongos on something, it would be reggae. And reggae is like the one thing I wouldn't try to do because it's been done too perfectly. And I would not want to put my toe in that water.
No, this is more of the, the strings that remind me of I Am the Walrus or something like that. Anything. And talk about the psychedelic ending on this. This is the one, by the end of the song, you've overlaid I put Pink Floyd, like Great Gig in the Sky, the African woman screaming kind of like where did that sound come from? Was that from a completely different song or was that somebody overdubbing just like the rest of everything?
That came from the early 2000s when I lived in Raleigh, Durham. And it's that R. Krishna dub band. It was like Thievery Corp was a big, deal then. It was that sound. Mm. And so we didn't do R. Krishna music, but it was a man and his wife. Anyway, so I was the keyboardist and I did all these samples of this video of this CD that I had of Indian, not American, Native American,
sure,
but Indian vocals. And so I just stuck all that in there because when it gets crazy and overwhelming and just insane at the end, that's those people that are going, it just makes it crazy, and I love it. It's a crank up thing and just let yourself loose into it.
Yeah, this is another 5-minute song. It's all the way at about 3 minutes in where you've had strings throughout, but the crazy string, the Duncan McKenzie violin solo, that sort of starts and then is just this twitchy. Yeah, so again, was this all over the internet? Were you kind of like, do something crazy here, or was this just his idea?
It was just his idea. That's the kind of people I got so lucky. James knew him, and I got so lucky that I knew Andrew, had met him at a party. And these guys don't do things right. And it's fantastic. They're not trying to stay in a frame. Mm-hmm. They constantly go out of it, but they will give you tracks so that if you wanted to have it sound like a string quartet, you could combine all the stuff. But then they're going to have a track or two that they go out. And that's what I love the best. And that's probably what you're talking about, the psychedelic side.
Yeah, so this is another one. You've got multiple guitars. You've got this sort of clanging guitar, the jarring guitar, right in the first verse that every line, is responded to.
Oh,
and then you've got
yeah.
another guitar that's this sort of warm, sometimes it's using a volume pedal or something. And sometimes you have just both of them at the same time. Is this just you doing all these parts or is this people sending these in? Or
the thing is me.
Uh-huh.
I added that much later in the process. The other part is Adam Magotti, and I just wanted to have, I don't know, I just felt like there was a space missing, and I'm a big space filler. And I mixed it so that it was incredibly dry, so that it stuck out.
Let me play some of the second verse so we can hear the couple of different guitars answer the different vocal lines here.
As long as we still get along. No, we're way too much. Can't seem to settle down.
Yeah, just having that nice chimey thing sort of playing with the jagged one, I thought was an interesting blending choice.
Yeah, I don't know why I felt that was missing, but I really love it. I mean, I like all this music. I love all the stuff I do, and it's not because I think I'm great. If you're not going to do what you love, then go mow the yard or something. I don't know what that
means. Well, it's interesting. So as ornamented as this song is, it's not required. So in fact, I'll insert a clip from the old version, right? Just to show what the strings are doing. That was just you on guitar. That's just, playing acoustic. Like it's a very bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, any thought about the evolution of this? This was not one, it sounded like the first one, you had this old recording and you layered onto it with the new things. This one, you just started fresh, right?
Pretty much, I guess so. I wrote the song when it was the winter, and my wife, we were out at the in-laws because they were on vacation, and they live out in East Hampton, and they have a fireplace, and so we had a fire going, and I just sat there with my guitar and started that dun, 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 and I was wavering my fingers to make it sound like something different than just doing it straight. When it came time to record it, I play piano. Piano's my strongest instrument, and so I blended it in there, and I thought it worked.
Well, yeah, let me insert another clip from later in the song.
I have a lot of dreams with nobody in them. I don't feel out of place.
The old version is still 5 minutes long, but you don't have all this extra stuff. It's just the piano doing a lot of crazy shit, just to kind of wandering off the key and just fill in the space with the chaos by itself.
Yeah, and there's a third verse to that version that's really stupid. And
we didn't I had a car, it went vroom vroom, something like
zoom,
that.
Zoom. Yes. Well, you know, that's the deal, is you try stuff. Don't try to stay in a frame. I kind of liked it, but I always knew that, when I was working with people, they were like going, I think you should just finish after the Johnny on the spot stuff, because they said that's really fun. So
what is the meaning of the Johnny on the spot stuff? Is this, you know, you reflecting on being a dependable job person and not pursuing your...
It's that thing in you that says you're ready. And if something happens, you'll show up. You'll be there. You'll do it. And it kind of means the hard stuff. In my mind, this song, it's like something really bad went down. And it doesn't say what it is. But there's always bad stuff that happens down at the river.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're in, even if you're in a van down by the river. It's like somebody had to do something that was not what they expected or not what they felt that they should ever do in their lives, but they got put into a situation where they had to do something really bad, and you showed up. And also there's this relationship thing where you show up even though it's not what you thought the situation you were going to get put into.
I have very mixed emotions about the use of the word dreams. You know, I've done this in songs myself because, like, say, oh, you know, I dream of a better life. That kind of the wish fulfill, like, I don't know. But if you're talking about actual dreams, like, I have no problem with that because, like, that's a main thing source for especially psychedelic songwriting, but any songwriting that's, you know, not just about your waking life. Yeah. So what is a dreams without your face in them? Like, is this an actual thing that you're reporting, or is this a imagery here?
It's imagery. You know, I have a lot of dreams with nobody in them. Mm-hmm. It's like you're just by yourself. You're just floating out in space. You know, it's like every once in a while I've done this kind of meditative thing where, you know, I'm married, you know, and I will say to myself, I'm not married. I don't have a wife. And then I'll walk to, I don't have a job. I don't have any responsibilities. I don't have a family. I'm not a brother. I'm not a son. And I'll keep moving. I'm not a musician. I don't play music. And eventually I will not be of this world. And it's not about death. It's about releasing all of this stuff that you feel like you have to show up for every day. And at some point, there's nobody there. There's nothing. And then you let go of your body, and then you're just floating out in space. Your face is not even there because you're nothing. And it's a real release, because there's some stuff that it's really hard to say. I'm not a musician. that's all I feel that I am, and I just play all these other roles. To say that, it's really interesting. It's yeah, you should try it sometime.
So is this a formal meditative practice that you do, you know, with regularity, or is this just one of the things that you've thought about over the years and, you know, tried out?
Yeah, I haven't done that in years, and I don't know that I ever heard of that. There's something I came up with. It maybe I did hear about it. I don't want to say I made it up, because there's probably some big spiritual leader who said to do that, or some meditation, I don't know. But that's kind of what it means. I have a lot of dreams with nobody in them.
Well, and one of the, you know, sort of meditative techniques we've been talking about, both these songs having an ending that has a repeating, well, this has this, it's, yeah, you got the thanks for coming round with the, this round getting ever longer and more interestingly harmonized. This one, you just have the have a lot of dreams repeated over and over again with, you know, the action is all what's going on in the background. I it seems like once you repeat something enough, it sort of starts to lose meaning. And even in this early in the song, well, is it I have a lot of dreams or I have a lot of dreams? Like the fact that you vary those within the first.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Oh, you don't even, this was not something you thought about, that there was just a natural.
No.
Oh, okay. This is the kind of thing that I would get stuck on. I'm like, which do I like better? Oh, I'll do both, but where should I do one? Where should I do the other? Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I kind of learned is I try to record the earliest version that I can. Sometimes it's a voice message, whatever it is. And I'll go back and listen to how I did it then, because that first run at trying to sing, which I'm kind of, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And so I end up making mistakes. And it's that whole happy mistake thing, because it actually was much more interesting. So I'm guessing that's probably what happened.
Now you're making me think about, you know, I used to in the 90s carry around a recording Walkman with me so I could capture these things, you know, before we had the voice memos thing. But I have heard of people that would like call their home machine, you know, this when we had cells, but before smartphones or just even from a public phone, and like sing the thing onto their own answering machine just to have some recorded version of it. I don't think I was ever that resourceful.
Yeah, I did that twice yesterday with the song that I started screwing around with, and I wanted to capture it because the feel of that right as it's being created, it begins to be bland. It begins to get sing-songy or like something I've done before or something that I'm influenced by.
Well, and when you're recording voice memo stuff, which sometimes I'll just, okay, I'm rethinking a particular section of a song. I'm rethinking the you know, and I'll get that down. But I'm not necessarily very good about, with my thumb, like actually labeling them. So I just have like a big string of things marked by date and location that, you know, future archivists.
Yeah. Are you ready for this? I haven't done it in 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, but I have a spreadsheet that lists out, it'll say the name of the song as the file name. It'll say what the song was about, a ranking of how good it is, 1 through 5, and what's missing.
Ah. Well, that's much more organized. I mean, I just have to like occasionally dip back in and like, oh, I just found a thing from 5 years ago. Maybe I should finish this. And probably far many of them don't get finished. They're just, they stay in the voicemails.
Well, it's worth every once in a while. And I've done it within the last week, is just take a moment and go back and dip into those songs or those things that I was doing, trying. And a bunch of it's not, doesn't really work or doesn't bring up what it did at that moment. But some of them are like, oh, wow, that's good. Because what I'm given in the moment, and I think this applies for anybody, what they're given in the moment won't come back again unless you bring it to life.
Right. Before we move on to the third song here, I just want to play, this is the place where just everything builds to that repeating part. Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable part of the song. fact that you start, you know, with a chorus, and then there's a chorus at the end of it, but yet it sounds like you didn't even change keys, but just with those rising strings, it sounds like we're in a different song or something fundamental has changed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Again, was that just the string guys just doing stuff, or did you have a walk up on guitar, something that was guiding them through that?
Something needed to be put between the ending, the way it goes out, and that big ending.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came up with that. I don't know if I sang it or something. I came up with that. And I called a couple of guys that I was working with on the album, and I sang it over, you know, the phone. What I wanted, they never called me back. But I know what I need, you know what I mean? To feel
sure.
Right, that it's where it needs to be. Because if it bothers me, then I have to change it, or it'll always bother me. And that big build-up part needed to be there. And then, yeah, so I don't remember what I provided those two guys on strings to do, but... they did great. And that cello thing where it's this squeaky little mouse, like this frantic little mouse that's been chased into the corner. It's fun.
All right, let's get the third song out there. So we are turning to your previous release, Might Could Have, from 2004. The song you had picked is Build Another One. And this, like many of the songs in this album, is much more concise. That whole 12-song album was 37 minutes, I see. And so this one is only 2.5, and it's one of the sort of slower bits as they go. But you just kind of state the idea. We still have a little bit of a psychedelic ending, but of course it's much shorter. Do you want to say a little about this song in particular and where you were at with this project before we hear this?
This song was part of the... divorce, on the other side of the divorce. I wrote a bunch of songs, and there a bunch of them are in that album. I just wanted to do something, quote, creative. And yeah, that the sound that starts it off with is, I had a sampler, and this was back when samplers were just sort of starting. It was a hardware sampler because computers didn't work fast enough at the time to have a really good, you know, sampler.
Mm-hmm.
I had a date, it was in the city, and I was waiting for her to open the door or something. I sat there and went, I made this little squeaky sound to myself for some reason, and I went, that would be cool to sample and then play. And that's what that sound is a sample of me going, you know, really. And I got this guy I was playing with to play trumpet in it. And some of these songs just come together when you're recording. And yeah, I don't know what else I can say about it.
Build another
All right, so we have a nice sort of chromatic, psychedelic, arpeggiated guitar line seems the foundation of the thing. Yeah, any thought about the composition of this? Or, you know, was just a kind of an instant idea that just came out like this? Or was there music first and then lyrics or the other way around? Or if you recall, I know this was a while ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mark, man, I can't remember what happened last week.
That's
okay. That was 20 years ago. Here,
well, then now you are external observer analyzing this work that you have run across that has some emotional connection to you. Based on how you generally did stuff at the time, what do you think? You said you did solo gigs at various points. Like, it seems like most of your songs can be presented, you know, just like we were just saying with the previous song, even though it's so arranged. Well, you can pretty much just play it with... Here, it's just you and guitar and a couple of tricks, you know, that you got your horn player and you got that weird sample, and that's most of the song.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just to kind of get into the song, get the feel of it. And also had this auto harp that I'd gotten the city off of, God, what it was, a Craigslist then? It might have been something else, but yeah. And I got that from somebody. And I just wanted to play with it, and I did, and it sounded cool. And, you know, it's that thing where you just keep trying stuff. I'm not good with doing simplicity, but I would like to have an album where it's simply produced.
Well, I like the idea of, you know, I feel like I did this much more in... when I just had a four track than when I have all these more tools at my, but just being resourceful, yeah. Yep. And finding like, here, let's run the vacuum cleaner. Let's, you know, once you get a sampler and you're playing with that, like it's limitless. So it's almost too much that I've run away from that for the most part, because I just can't.
I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. When I first got a sampler, I put two microphones on a table and I rolled a marble through the middle of them. So you'd get this feeling and slow it way down. So you feel like you're this marble or big thing is going through your head. Oh, well.
I know we're for the fourth song, which I don't want to quite introduce yet, that you have some actual electronics on there. I mean, have you, you said you play with a click, so does that lend itself to, oh, here, let me import a little prefab drum loop or anything like that? It seems like mostly you're not. This sounded, even though you're using a sampler, it seems like you have a very sort of purist, freeform, low-tech aesthetic, but you also said you do everything with a click, and clearly the fourth song has some, it sounds like there's a sequencer involved.
I use Addictive Drums.
Okay.
Either that was a groove that was in there, or sometimes I'll take the MIDI from the groove that came out of Addictive Drums. I don't know if you've ever used it, but you get a bunch of drum grooves that you can... And sometimes I don't even listen to them. I just pull them in. And sometimes I have like three tracks of drums going all at the same time that I haven't listened to. And one might be a jazz groove. And another one might be a hip hop. And then sometimes I'll take the MIDI and move it down to an instrument. Because, you know, a kick is a C. And so you end up kind of with a C-based song. So I was listening to that, and I don't know where, I can't tell exactly where this groove came from. I guess I could have dug into the project and could have let you know exactly how that got built.
That's okay. I'm just sort of trying to gauge. So saying it's low tech is misleading, because it is freeform and resourceful. But among the resources are, of course, like, yeah, I have a bunch of plugins. I have a bunch of different synths, you know, things in the DAW.
Yeah.
That, of course, you know, that's even easier than getting up and finding things around the house to to make strange noises with.
Oh, totally. Totally. Because I'm just looking for some seed to get me inspired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes that seed doesn't even show up at the rest of the song. But grooves, to me, I really can get going when I've got a groove.
Do you recall with Build Another One, even like what this song is about? It's falling down. It's all the darkness or the low. Like, obviously, it's sort of a bummer.
It's a bummer.
You said it was about the divorce. Build a strum, another one like that with these interesting vocal delivery with all these pauses in it. Yeah. Any thoughts about just that composition?
After I'd sent you those songs, it's like, wow. My heart gets really broken when it gets broken. So it's so much like my dead friend, because it was about the divorce. It was about this thing that I believed in that would withstand anything, and it's falling down. And it's just hard to believe that it's almost hitting the ground. It's this big monument, this big tall building. And somebody asked me if it was about 9/11, and you know, it wasn't.
Well, and vocally, you know, we were saying in My Dead Friend, it's a little more stoic. You were saying lifeless presentation.
Yeah.
But here, you let yourself be more expressive. Interestingly layered, though, you know, they're doing this sort of parallel octave vocals, and there's a, I don't know, is there a whisper track on there, too? I know you have some songs.
There is. I noticed that when I was listening to it before.
There are definitely places on the previous album where if you told me this was an Elliott Smith track, I might believe you, because you have, you know, a really nice, pretty melody that you're doubling yourself, but it's a very faint delivery kind of thing. Yeah. Any thoughts about your vocal influences overall?
Yeah, when I was doing that album, I was partners in a studio on the Lower East Side, and I was working on the album, and somebody else heard what I was doing, and they said, "You sound like Elliott Smith." And I went, "Who's Elliott Smith?"
Ah.
And they said, "You should check him out." And so I got one of his CDs, albums, and was, "Oh my God, this guy is great." And what I loved about the 90s was everybody recorded the way they wanted to record. They didn't have to follow any rules, follow anything. There was all so much experimentation. And like you said, people back then had four tracks. I was doing four track cassettes. And you had to try different things. It wasn't going to be perfect. You weren't going to be in a studio. And so listening to his music, because I was doubling vocals, and I was like, is this cheesy? Because it sounds kind of good if I put one to the far left and the other one to the far right, but this is kind of...
Sure.
And the great things about someone like him putting something out is that I get to see it's okay. I can do it that way. And so that's how it all came about. And man, he is amazing. God, I mean, he is, whatever, his music still lasts. I mean, he was just a genius. And that's kind of neat that my stuff sounds like him, but I wasn't doing it patterned after him.
No, it's you know, once you start double tracking and overdubbing yourself, then it's one of those things that is available on the palette, you know, that he stumbled across that himself. That was not like what he sounds like in Heat Miser, his first band. He was more rock and roll. And I don't think I've told this anecdote before, that I had a song that I was working with a listener to my other podcast, who I was trying to get him to do some stuff on one of my solo songs. And I had sent him my track, which kind of has my typical, like, maybe too much vibrato, trying to be Elvis Costello, you know, trying to be expressive.
Cool.
And it was one of the most insulting things he said to me, like, "I don't like the vocal. It's not totally in tune. You should just whisper it and double track yourself." And like, well, that's the Elliott Smith thing. I don't think I have to do that. What? This is not the... Anyway. I did not change it. I just released it the way it was, and he didn't play on it.
Awesome.
So.
Awesome. That's what the world needs.
Just to wrap up here, tell me the rest of the story about ODOO, that we're about to hear. So this is unreleased. This is not on either of the albums that are out now, but it will be on something eventually. And it's got a little kind of a Beck thing. You're doing a little talk singing, rapping. Anyway, yeah, tell me, say whatever you want to say about this.
Yeah, it is kind of rapish, the way the lyrics are dropped out there. Did we talk about High Noon?
No.
High Noon is this thing that I've been doing with a friend of mine for like 7 or 8 years. And every 2 weeks at 12 o'clock on Monday, you have to send a song. And it can be produced, it can be, you know, recorded with drums and all sorts of stuff. Or it can be get your phone out and record something on the phone. And it could be just a beat, something you've got, you know, and just send it. And you have to do it every 2 weeks by 12 o'clock on Monday. Mm. And it's called High Noon. And we've got like 180 songs now. And a lot of songs like Golden Boy, several others that are on the album come from that. And more songs are going to come out of the next albums from that. You don't have to think things through. It doesn't have to be perfect. It almost seems to me it's kind of like the Beatles and all those bands back in the day, and that they always hear them say, yeah, Paul came in, you know, into the studio and said, I'm kind of working with this and here, and he would play it and then the rest of the band would fill it out. I'm not a big collaborator. And so I'm saying all this because you have to just get something started to have something to submit. And this one was, I got that beat going and it was really fun. And so I played bass over it. And then it's like, okay, I've got to sing something over this. And so I was going, dun, 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 that I could just feel that was the rhythmic of the vocal for it. And then when I hit a chorusy thing, I went, odie, odie, odo, oh, and it was like, oh, that's fun. That's like the hook. That's the thing that's really fun to sing along with. And then I just need to come up with words for the verses. And I already had the rhythm of it. And I have tons of notebooks of words. They're not lyrics. They're just words that I wrote when I would go into work on the train. I had 2 stops and I had that amount of time to write something. And they were usually just kind of off the cuff, playing with words, playing with alliteration, because a lot of times alliteration fits great in music, mm-hmm. especially when you're doing a rhythmic stuff. So that's where it all came from. And then the buildup at the end surprised me, because I love whatever I did on some synthesizer. It just works. And I love the way that sounds, the way it takes out at the end. So there's no sense to the song. I don't know what it's about. I find it fun. So I thought I'd send it to you.
Yes. Well, I'm glad we're including it on here, because, you know, we've got some bummers on here. We got some rich emotional stuff. And just to, you do have on the new album, you have the I Am the Man song that you do in a silly falsetto. And that is sort of the exception. But, you know, you were nice enough to send me at my request some of your earlier, as yet not republished stuff, let's put it that way. And one of them sounded like The Residents. I don't know if you're into that band.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. My wife loves it.
Yes. Or, you know, some definite Zappa influence. Like there's, you know, quite a variety of stuff, even on the new album. And I think, of course, the new album is a great place for people to start. But I hope the rest of that stuff, including Odie Odio here, becomes widely available. And I'm, you know, honored that we could premiere it on this show.
Yes. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much for chatting. Have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark. This was a lot of fun.
Here's ODODO. Or ODOO. That's not.
Yeah.
adding some.
gonna go downtown, gonna go downtown. Somebody gonna sneak around, gonna sneak around, gonna sneak around. Somebody gonna be the clown, gonna be the clown, gonna be the clown. Somebody be upside down, be upside down, be upside down. Audio, ho, ho, audio. Nobody wanna see that show, wanna see that show, wanna see that show. Nobody wanna watch it go, wanna watch it go, wanna watch it go. But nobody wanna stop the flow, wanna stop the flow, wanna stop the flow. Audio, oh, oh, audio.
Thanks so much to T. Learn about his music at ttempleton.com. This is a very inspirational story, of course. If you are a musician who's been procrastinating in some way, we already passed the time where you could have made it as a young person. You know, it's never too late to get your shit together, take some of that hard-earned cash from your day job and put it toward making the album you've always wanted to make. My next episode is with Maya Sharp, a very sharp singer-songwriter. Based in country, but with the scope of Joni Mitchell, maybe. And I'm prepping right now to talk to folk legend Eric Anderson, whose first album was in 1965, right at the heart of that Greenwich Village scene. One of his songs was covered by Bob Dylan, Judy Collins, and even John Denver. And I've got some great interviews planned for after that. So to make sure you're hearing all the episodes promptly, you want to subscribe directly to the Nakedly Examined Music Podcast, even if you're hearing this on the Partially Examined Life feed. So if you're listening via the Apple Podcasts app, for instance, you just look up Nakedly Examined Music. You should find us right there. And while you're there, please leave a nice rating or review, which will help people learn about the show. Of course, the thing that'll really help is if you go to patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic, you can sign up for the ad-free feed. That'll get you my detailed notes breaking down the songs, giving you the lyrics, making lots of comments about the arrangements, highlighting interesting parts for you to pay attention to. It costs you almost nothing and will let me know that you actually care about this podcast continuing to exist. Hope you're all doing well, being creative, Till next time, keep on musicking. This is Mark Linsenmeyer signing off.